Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abamon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week, we delve into something a little more experiential. A series of occult experiments we've conducted using hypnosis as a tool for magical practice. We've unearthed some fascinating insights, as well as some unsettling moments that we're eager to share with you. So breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. The room was steeped in an unnatural stillness, broken only by the steady hypnotic tick of the metronome. Dr. Anna Stone sat reclined in a high-backed chair, her hands resting lightly on the armrests, her breathing measured. Across from her, her colleague watched intently, his voice slow and deliberate as he guided her deeper into the trance. At first, her face was calm, almost serene, but as the minutes stretched on, a tension began to ripple through her features. Her lips trembled, her brow furrowed, and her head turned slightly to the side, as though listening to someone just out of sight. "I see it now," Anna whispered, her voice distant and hollow. "A door, it shouldn't exist, it's opening and I'm falling." Her colleague shifted in his chair, his earlier confidence now shaded with unease. He tried to guide her to the safer mental ground, but she shook her head violently, her body tensing against the fabric of the chair. "It's here," she said, her voice thin and breaking, "watching you through me." He glanced nervously at the recorder, its red light flickering erratically as if it too strained under the weight of her words. Suddenly, her eyes snapped open, wide and unblinking. Her gaze locked onto him, her lips curled into a smile, but it wasn't hers. It was cold, knowing, and cruel. "You shouldn't have called me," she said, her voice layered, her own in something darker. Before he could react, her hand shot forward, silencing the metronome with a sharp click. The room fell into a suffocating silence. But her final words lingered, heavy and inescapable. "This isn't over. I'll see you both again."
Three, two, one. All right, welcome back to another episode of Discourse with myself, Abamon the Great, and a co-host, Dr. Anna Stone. And we are coming out of our podcast on the Demiurge. We haven't really been discussing much of anything lately. I think at the end of that podcast, we were really excited because we were about to perform a little bit of an occult experiment. And since we performed that first experiment, it's basically all we've been doing together.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I guess as we were approaching the podcast this week and we're like, what are we going to talk about? I guess we just said, like, you know,
let's just talk about
what we've been
doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So this week we're going to be talking about hypnosis. And I don't think if anybody's listen to the other episodes that would be any surprise, because I think we've mentioned a few times how we were kind of digging around mesmerism and hypnotism,
right? And I didn't believe it.
Yeah, you didn't believe what?
I didn't believe that I could be hypnotized, because it's been attempted,
yeah,
by legit professionals, you know, and it didn't work.
So I think that was like when I was, because at first I was just curious and I was just researching it, right? It's nothing that I've ever attempted to do, or I've never sought out a hypnotist before.
Right.
But it was in reading that Honograph book. I got exposed. I had no idea about that, like, mesmer chain that like ran into spiritualism. I had never ran into that before, and so I was just curious. So like, oh, here's like a missing piece of occult chronology that I've never been exposed to. And so I was digging around the history of hypnotism by Alan Gald. I think I was reading that just to kind of get familiar with some of the names, and I kept getting deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. And you said something about how, oh, I can't be hypnotized.
I legitimately, even during a time when I would have thought it would have worked. You know, I just come out of a very serious medical procedure, and part of the recovery for that was hypnosis. And this lady came in and she put all those electrodes on my head and was looking at my brainwaves. And she did her whole thing, and I just sat there completely unfazed, and she couldn't see any difference in my brainwaves. But the other people, because it was like a group thing, the other people were completely out. Like, it was crazy to watch, because I was just like, what is going on? Like, they were out, and I was watching her monitors, and I could see the difference in their brainwaves completely, but nothing happened with me. And she's like a professional, like, medical hypnotherapist, right?
So, yeah.
You know, that was in 2011, and it just didn't work. And I was like, I just can't be hypnotized, you know? I thought I was too strong-willed, maybe, or something to that effect.
Yeah. I remember, like, when you said that, and it just kind of, like, clicked with me. I was like, I bet I could hypnotize you, right?
You did say that.
That's what kind of led me into, okay, I'm going to try to hypnotize
you. You did say that.
You, because from my, like, what I was reading, it was, at first it started with mesmer, with mesmerism, and there was this whole working theory around it, and you had to have a bunch of tools, and basically there was like this almost chi force called, you know, animal gravity or animal magnetism.
Yeah.
At first it was animal gravity, and then he switched it to animal magnetism, because
that sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, magnetism was like the new physics lingo of the time, you know? Like, everything was magnets.
Yeah.
Like, magnetic polarity.
Witchcraft, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, don't tell the insane clown posse.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where the practice of hypnosis has had a very tainted, like, run this whole time because of that.
Yeah, so I think it was like, because it started out, they had this huge, like, complex theory built around it, right?
Yeah.
And then as it's progressing, it turns into hypnotism with James Braid, who starts to bring it more into, like, psychotherapy and a subconscious thing. And it's no longer this, like, permeating fluid or force that's in all living things, right?
Right.
And so he's the one that brings it into hypnotism as we know it, but hypnotists were still using, like, tools. Like, they thought that they needed either a ticking watch, or they thought, like, they needed certain things, like certain sounds or whatever.
Right.
In order to trigger the hypnotic state. And then it just kept hitting Occam's razor until it turned strictly into, like, you know, this is, like, literally just like a human to human reaction.
Right. Yeah. It was, because before it was more of a mystical thing, right? Because of mesmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Braid was the one that said, no, it's a psychological construct. It's a psychological phenomenon, not mystical. Right. He was trying to bring it into the mainstream, I guess, maybe. But then his term of it also messed it up because he named it after the Greek god of sleep, Hypnos.
Right? Yeah.
And then that's really not what's happening.
What?
You're not asleep.
Sleep?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I think you are.
You do?
Like, when I do it. Yeah. But so, like, over the course of that research, it's basically like these people that are, like, pioneering hypnotism and really trying to figure it out and get it down to, like, a really practical thing. They learn that they don't need the tools. And they developed this idea of this, like, kind of subconscious programming, which obviously, you know, becomes the foundations for a lot of psychotherapy.
Right.
But the contingent thing on the process of hypnosis has to be like, it's like suggestibility, and something called the hypnotizable trait or whatever. So you basically have to believe it. And so I kind of concluded that if anybody could hypnotize you, it would be me, because you are convinced I am the most high-powered wizard you've ever met.
Well, that's bar none. Like, that's facts. I mean, I'm not being facetious, like 100%. And when you said that, I was like, damn it, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, if there's anybody, because I think trust has to be there too.
Yeah.
Right. For sure. Because that was one of the things I was worried about with that woman. I didn't know her. She doesn't know me. I wasn't sure what she might put in my head, you know, like, and I didn't like the idea of someone poking around in my subconscious like that. Like, I didn't know, because I don't know what her motives were. Like, you know, not to be paranoid, but and so, well, do I trust you? So, you know, I figured, okay, we'll try it.
Yeah.
I didn't really think it was going to work.
I honestly
didn't think it was going to work.
When we got off that episode, I thought we were going to be up for like 3 hours while I was trying to figure it out. It worked instantly. I was really surprised.
I'm weak-minded, apparently.
I don't think that's what that means.
I don't think you're weak-minded.
I just think we, you know.
I got motivated.
We have the correct dynamic necessary. And I'm also like.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Like, all my stats are on in illusion mage, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, the powers of the moon. Like,
yeah,
that kind
no,
of thing.
You, yeah. you, I knew, like, if any, I knew if it was possible, it would be, you would be able to do it. Even without any training.
I had, like, no training. I read, like, a handful of books, and I made it a point that I was not going to read anything past. Any books on hypnotism past the 19th century.
Oh my gosh.
Because I didn't want to get influenced by like the like 60s and 70s like crystal hypnotherapists or whatever. So I was like, I'm going to try to like put my mindset in the mindset of like a Victorian like hypnotist.
That because, is what you said.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I was only reading like hypnotism manuals from those hypnotists or whatever.
And I'm on the fainting couch. Lay there.
Yeah, exactly.
Laid out. Just, you know, like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. And I'm going to try to follow that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long it took.
It took like 3 minutes. Stop. It was so fast.
Oh my God.
I was like, I thought you were messing with me.
Well, I don't even remember. Like, I don't quite remember everything from that. So
yeah.
So I don't quite remember all of it, but I do recall coming out of that and being like, "What's up?
Yeah,
what happened?" It was a little surprising. I was very tired afterwards and groggy, and I had a headache.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
How are the head? Are you still getting them?
I didn't today. No.
Okay.
I did it again, but it was.
I think being an untrained hypnotist, I just like read a few like 19th century manuals. I feel like my technique might be a little, I've only been doing it a week.
I mean,
I feel like my technique might be a little sloppy.
This is a me thing, because when it was happening a couple times, after a few times of doing it, I was like, I know you were worried a little bit.
Yeah.
Why I was so kind of out of it. So then we looked it up, and it turns out that people that have had severe trauma backgrounds or severe hypervigilance, you know, kind of status, that because you can't relax in waking, like in normal time, you know, that it takes a lot out of the person. And so that is a caveat, like just a, you know, warning that if you're somebody that has a lot of trauma in your past and you can't easily relax, then it takes a lot out of you, because it puts you in a place that your body is absolutely not used to being in.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's more arduous on the system than it would be for somebody that just can meditate. Like, I can't meditate, you know?
I
know.
Well, so that was one of the things. I mean, so when we decided we were going to mess around with hypnotism, I specifically, we were interested in the dynamic between, because one of the things like, that we're constantly talking about is like, how do we do magic together, right? Like in a synthesis between, you know, man and woman in a, you know, certain type of relationship.
Right.
where I have certain, my magic is a certain way, and then your magic is a certain way, and then on top of that, you have the skill set of being a medium.
Right.
And
I guess
so. Yeah, if you can call it,
whatever you call it.
I know you don't. You don't like to.
No, I just
think
I don't,
of it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was specifically interested in. Okay, so if we're gonna be doing hypnotism, we're going to try to reconstruct the Victorian seance because
that's exciting.
Yeah, which is pretty cool because. Yeah. Hypnotism was a part of the Victorian seance, right? But they, a lot of times, the seance mediums, they would be claiming that they practice auto-hypnosis.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, I realize now, like, I've realized that is what so I can, just backtrack a bit. I can meditate, but I can't meditate in a still state. Mm-hmm. Like, I can meditate while I'm doing some physical activity, like, I don't know, washing dishes or roller skating or driving. I don't promote that. But you know, like something where it's kind of like I'm on autopilot and it's something else is going on that I can just kind of zone out. Right. But I can't just sit. Like if you tell me to just sit and clear my mind, that's like impossible. So I have to be busy, if that makes sense.
That's a very specific type of meditation though.
Right.
And I think that, so most Western people, when they think of meditation, they think of that meditation, which is mindfulness meditation or Zen, right?
Okay.
It's a very specific type of meditation. And you were talking about it that the other day, like magicians, magical practitioners, they meditate in a very laser focused way, right? Like when you're practicing visualization, it's not that you're not doing the same thing. Like when you're practicing visualization, or let's say you're doing like some kind of pranayama or something like that. Well, pranayama can help you with mindfulness meditation, but there's a lot of focused meditations out there where you're not supposed to be clearing your mind, but you're supposed to be using it as a laser focus.
Right. I mean, I do that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but what you just said right now about how, you know, like you can zone out when you're driving, that's one of the things that, you know, you look for in somebody that is able to be hypnotized, you know?
Yeah. Well, go figure. But also I realize that when I am channeling or whatever you want to call it, that's what's happening also. Like I put myself in that state, you know? So like when I read your cards the first time, like I purposely, like I was, that's what I was doing. Like I was, when I shuffle cards, that's me getting into that state of putting myself under, I guess, a trance, hypnosis, right?
Yeah.
And I think that it's easier because I dissociate a lot. So, you know, I like, that's a skill set I've learned from a very long ago, which is why, you know, now that I've looked into this more, it's like, I can't believe I wasn't able to be hypnotized before because those are the traits, right?
Yeah.
All of them. I hit all of them. Yeah.
I feel like the one trait that people don't like to hear is suggestibility, but I think, you think of that in just like a surface level term, it seems like a negative trait, but really suggestibility is your, like when you're talking about as a hypnotic trait or whatever, it's talking about your ability to like for acceptance or being able to like kind of go with.
Well, I think it's like also about, I think it dovetails with, the idea of having flexible beliefs, like, you know, that where if you're presented with evidence that can contradict something that you know to be true, that you're not just going to outright dismiss it, that kind of thing. So like, you know, if you, that you're able to kind of adapt to the environment, you know, as needed, under the right circumstances. And you're right. This is the number one reason I didn't want to be hypnotized is because I was like, fuck that. I am not weak-minded. Like suggestibility denotes to me being weak-minded, but I guess that is the wrong way to look at that term for the most, I mean, for maybe one of those stage shows, not so much, but like in the context we're talking about, it's a little different perhaps.
Yeah. Because the other traits had to do with like being able to like focus on a specific task or,
zone out,
and that kind of stuff and being open-minded and flexible.
Right.
And
imagination, right?
Yeah. And imagination. Exactly. Which are all like traits that I think anybody that practices magic has.
Needs to have, right? Yeah. I mean, how are you going to visualize your goal if you can't visualize your goal? Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, That's definitely part of it. I mean, but I didn't know it was going to happen that fast.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was very surprised. I had read reports from, you know, these old dead guys. Yeah. That some of them, like, they would get really frustrated because they would have a patient and, like, the first session, it would take them like 3 hours to hypnotize them. And they would have to keep having sessions with this person to finally break him down to a point where it's like they could hypnotize him fast enough that they could actually do some work or whatever.
Right. So yeah. You did it with me the first time, and then the next time, was it as fast or faster?
Yeah. So I think that's where I made a mistake. So I did it. I did a prolonged one. And the technique that I used was I adopted a lucid dreaming technique that I personally use, where it's an interaction. It's basically like how to, stabilize your subconscious mind when you're in a lucid dreaming state, and it's falling into a black cosmic ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I adopted that for a hypnotic kind of setting or whatever. I always call that cosmic ocean Abzu. I don't know where I picked that up from.
Interesting.
Yeah, Abzu is
because I was like, I don't know if I want to tell you that.
What?
Because when you were having me in there, I was like, oh, I'm in the absolute.
Oh, you're in the absolute?
Yeah.
It's Abzu is the weird Mesopotamian primordial cosmic waters. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
That's from the Monroe. You know, like from the gateway experience, like the gateway assessment from Monroe Institute. Mm-hmm. That's the term they use.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe I picked that up. I don't know.
I don't know. I gave that paper is fairly, I don't know. Had you read it before I gave it to you?
I don't know. Yeah. I think like when I developed that technique, it was probably 2013 or something.
No, that wasn't even released until 2014. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I might have picked it up somewhere, but I always associated it with that. It was like that technique, and then I just associated it with the Mesopotamian mythology. But that was so walking you into that was the first thing that I did, and then I started doing my hypnosis checks because I noticed you were having hypnagogic twitches, right? So this is something that when people are
jerks.
Yeah, because when people are entering hypnagogia, sometimes they get the sensation of falling, and their body will react to it, right?
Yeah, I thought I tripped, right? Didn't I?
So,
yeah, I felt like I tripped or something and fell.
Yeah, so I noticed that, and that's when I was like, oh, you know, I need to start performing some checks right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so I did a balloon check where your arm floated above your head because it was tied to a balloon.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden your arm was rigid as a steel rod. And then I released it. And then I did the pinch test.
Oh, yeah.
And see if you could feel it. You didn't have a reaction to it. So.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. But is that deeper than we wanted to be or where we're trying to be?
So that's pretty deep. I think it's past hypnagogia. So once you go past hypnagogia, so you're going to start your waking state. Mm-hmm. Hypnagogia is that transition where your body's asleep but your mind's awake,
right?
And then somnambulism is the sleepwalking state,
yeah,
right, to where your body can respond, yeah, but you're like,
you're parasympathetic, you haven't been shut off yet.
Yeah exactly. So you're in somnambulism. Deeper than that is the Esdaile state, and we can talk about that later. But once I got you into somnambulism, that's when I set up a post-hypnotic suggestion. And a post-hypnotic suggestion is basically where you can use a word or a cue or something in order to trigger a response or a behavior or an emotion or something in the person who's been hypnotized. And so the cue that I set was to bring you directly back into somnambulism in that very first session, right? So when we went into the second session, I jumped right into it with the cue.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why you got a headache and we're confused.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I was just like, all right, go to sleep.
I'm just like, ow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had like, it was hard to come back out. I felt like, you know, when you fall asleep somewhere and you don't like maybe you've had too much drink or something, and like you wake up and you're like, where am I? Kind of vibe, you know, that was kind of how it felt. Yeah, it was very strange. I was a little surprised, a little embarrassed, not gonna lie. Like, I was like, oh no, it worked. I guess it does work. Cause I honestly didn't, I thought that, I mean, I was in that group, like I said, that group setting where I did see these people, and one of the people that was there, I knew very well. And to see that person under hypnosis was wild to me. I was like, what on earth is happening here? So I don't want to say that I thought it was all fake, but like I did, you know, I'm sure you came across this in your research. People think it's fake.
Oh yeah. Well, it was weird because I feel like I didn't realize that people thought it was fake.
Fake. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I didn't realize
the acting,
that.
Acting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, cause when I shared with, one of my normie friends, like what we were doing.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, that's really cool if it was real. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, what do you mean if it's real?
Yeah.
And he's like, it's pseudoscience. I was like, somebody, that's wild to me. That's like saying like sleepwalking isn't real, you know?
Well, I mean, a lot of people have used that as a defense to like crime. You know, they don't get away with it, but you never know.
My gosh. Can we?
What?
I can hypnotize you to rob a bank. We get away with it?
Like, it's usually murder. Okay. Like, those are the cases.
Oh, okay.
That I'm aware of.
Just if I need to off somebody.
No, I will not sign up for that.
See, now you're doing, okay. I know you're doing post hypnotic suggestion on me now.
No, but like, it's, there's a famous case of this guy who killed his wife.
Yeah.
While he was asleep, and he had a history of sleepwalking and doing crazy things, like driving the family car and crashing it and just doing weird stuff. And like, you know, this one night, you know, I guess his wife was like in the hot tub or something, and then she was drowned. And then the next morning he wakes up, finds her out there, and he's like, oh my God. But the video camera from the next door neighbor's house shows, like, you know, and that was his defense, was he was sleepwalking. And that trial went on for a really long time because there was this battle of experts in that case that was wild. Like, it's a really fascinating case to watch, actually, because I still don't know, you know, like, I mean, we've all had dreams like that, right? Like, where we've like done something bad in our dream and like, oh gosh, then you wake up and you're like, oh, thank God.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You know, right? Imagine that that's not how it goes, you know, like, so could it be possible? Perhaps. It's hard for me to believe that during all the things he did, he would still be asleep, you know, like all of the steps he took. But, you know, it did mitigate him from death penalty, though.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. That's so he crazy. Didn't get that, but because they couldn't decide on that. But that's a really famous case. And that's not the only one. But so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of skepticism about it. And especially because of the fact that its origins are tied to stage shows, right? Like, that was one of the things that was really popular back then. Yeah.
So it went into two different directions, right? So there was the first part of the medical community that picked it up were surgeons trying to use it as an anesthetic.
Right. Tell me about that. So you came across some crazy stuff in your research.
Yeah. So that's what like really interested me in hypnotism. I was like originally like, oh, who's this Mesmer guy and how did he get to spiritualism? And spiritualism is the part of it that was like, oh, we're using this for stage shows, right? We're using this in seances. Using it for stage shows, which kind of like brings me back to, you know, reconstructing the Victorian seance.
Yeah. Without the ectoplasm.
Yeah, exactly. Without the ectoplasm. So I definitely have an idea about what happened there, because after like knowing mediums, and especially after, you know, knowing you and seeing you go through it, when that becomes like a performative thing, you're under a lot of pressure. And so I can definitely see how like the reason the Victorian seance and spiritualism got gutted was because it was a performance.
Right.
And so
you can't be on all the time.
You, a lot of times you don't have control. It's not repeatable. It's not verifiable. And so if you're before an audience and they expect you to contact a ghost and, you know, maybe it's not working. I mean, not to say that.
That, you know, makes it right.
That, not to say that. You know, majority of those mediums probably didn't have any skills at all, you know, right. But I can definitely see if you are in that kind of stage show circuit, you know, why all of society would throw out hypnotism with mediums as a, you know, this is all chicanery and all, you know, which is interesting, because like, that's why I want to reapproach it, because I want to reapproach it. It's like, okay, now it's like 100 years later.
Right. We have more technology.
We have more understanding of the process of hypnotism. We have developments in magic.
Science that, you know, we have doctors that are studying this now and proving things in their labs, like, which is crazy.
Well, the developments in dream studying, we understand sleep processes a lot more. Yeah. I mean, the average person understands sleep process is better than, you know, the psychotherapists from the 19th century, you know, the foremost ones. And then, like one of the things I'm super interested in is, I think one of the shining components of chaos magic is that it is a exercise in the subconscious mind, right? It is. I feel like it's born, and chaos magicians get really mad at me for saying this too, that it's mentalism. But I see that. I don't think chaos magic could exist without mentalism and the spiritualist movement and mesmerism and this whole lineage right here. I feel like they're very closely entwined. So I think like moving forward is like, okay, like let's step back. Like let's look at how can we utilize hypnotism in magical practice and in mediumship in particular. How can you reconstruct the Victorian seance, and can you do it with a repeatable, verifiable ritual technology?
Right. I mean, that's going to be there's a lot of variables there, but that's what we're working on, right? Like, so
that's what we're trying to figure out if we can do that.
Yeah. And like, so, I mean, but yes, like this with magic, it's definitely, I mean, I don't see how you, I mean, that's how I always, whenever I'm doing any kind of magic, I'm always in some kind of trance state, quote unquote, which is the same thing as far as I'm concerned. I think the difference is the fact that I'm putting myself into it as compared to somebody else putting me into it. That's like, I believe like the only difference here.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe when I do it, it's like, I'm just allowing whatever to kind of come in without any guidance. Right. Uh-huh. So maybe it's more dangerous perhaps that way. I know I've had like a lot of times where when I am getting information, it's very upsetting and I'll be unfortunately it'll make me cry. I hate crying so much, but that happens a lot. Like where I'll just get bombarded with stuff that's terrible. And I think if I was being guided in that sense, that probably that wouldn't happen, because like I would get pulled out of it perhaps. Right. Because it gets really, there's been times where it's been like really awful. But going back to how this delineation between like the occult and medicine and pharma, you know, started, hypnosis originally was kind of an alternative to anesthesia, right? Because we didn't have it yet.
Yeah.
And people had to get things done to their bodies that was painful, right? And like, what would we do? And sleep is not the same thing as anesthetic.
Yeah. So it was in its, anesthetics were in their infancy when hypnotism was being picked up by surgeons. Mm-hmm. There was one surgeon in particular, Scottish surgeon who worked for the East Indian Trading Company, and he lived in India for a while. He ended up performing, I think he looked it up, it was like 273 or somewhere around that number, successful surgeries where patients had no complaints of pain using hypnosis.
What kind of surgeries do you know?
Oh, like, man. Sorry.
That's okay. Like, but they were actual surgery, like where they're being cut open.
Yeah, where they're being cut open. Yeah, they're so he's performing it on people, Indians in India, right?
Yeah, the people that live in India. Yeah.
And he was, you know, very excited about it, and he ended up publishing about it, and he basically, you know, European medicine, because of the attitudes towards Indian people during British colonization, basically said it didn't count because they were Indians. So they decided to go with ether, the anesthetic, instead of taking, you know, this man's successes with hypnotism. And it was just like, I've never been that interested in in this stuff, but when I was reading through the it was when I landed on those surgeon hypnotists that I was like, this is really fascinating, you know, because like I've known about the psychoanalytical ones, the psychotherapeutic ones, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, that's just not my territory. I don't know what it was about those surgeons that drew me into it. And then I was like really fascinated.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just another example of pharma messing everything up for everybody.
So that wasn't like psychiatric though. This is just, anesthesia.
It's everywhere. Yeah. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Because that stuff was, they were both budding at the same time, right? They're both becoming a thing at the same time. And like their position was, oh, well, hypnosis is not like, you can't replicate this.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's not as reliable as these drugs we have that cost money.
Yeah.
And it's free, you know, like it's free. Like it's not something that you got to, you know, like it's not a drug you have to pay for. So yeah, no, it's not going to ever fly. Just like anything else, like that we can cure without medications, but, cause pharma, you suck. But you know how I feel about this. So this is when you said that to me, I was like, first thing I said was, of course not. Yeah. Like, of course not, because they're not going to be able to benefit from it.
So that was the Esdale of, and the Esdale state is named after him.
Right. So I forgot one little thing. So this is wild. Okay. So the farm, one of the positions that pharma took on this when they were arguing, there's an argument about it, okay, that was played out in the papers and such, was that hypnosis, and I just want you to hear the wording of this, hypnosis, quote, requires skilled practitioners to perform it, whereas our medications do not.
I guess idiot proof, right?
I mean, I'm sorry if you're doing a surgery on me, I hope you're freaking skilled. What? That's crazy.
Well, anesthesiologists today, that's a highly skilled position.
You sit and wait. You sit there and watch somebody sleeping, or they're not even sleep, right? But that's the difference, is with anesthesia, we don't even know. They still, to this day, in case you're wondering, don't know what happens to you when you're under it. They don't know where you go. Like, where's your consciousness? Like, where is it? You're not feeling any pain. No one has any memories of any surgery, unless you're very unlucky and you have that horrible, you know, thing that happens to you where you're there and can feel everything and can't move. That's very rare. Yeah. But, you know, that is, they don't know. So, but with hypnosis, they think they know, right? At least, which is what are they doing?
Well, I mean, from what I can observe, the very, you know, I'm basically a expert hypnotist now. I've been doing it all for all of a week. from what I've observed, it reminds me so much of, dream practices, right? Mm-hmm. Just like watching like how your body reacts. And, when you're talking to me during the state, the things that you're describing. And that's when it first got into me that I could start using like lucid dreaming techniques on you to kind of like lead you through the state and get you to places I was trying to get you to go or whatever. But I think in hypnotism, it's you're approaching the subconscious, right? The subconscious is open and exposed and malleable when you are in an hypnotic state. Right. And so it's you're able to figure out what's going on in it, like get responses out of it. But you're also able to kind of reprogram it or, you know, probe it, poke at it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The conscious mind's completely gone, and what comes over is the subconscious mind.
Right. So that logical filter is gone, and it's just left with what is actually there, right?
Or what's driving you.
Right. Like what the underlying current is of whatever your issue is or something. So like, and I do... So I don't remember, I guess, the parts where that I was in a deeper aspect of it.
So there are certain sessions that I did another technique on you, which is called hypnotic amnesia. And it's basically I would tell you in that session. It's like what we're discussing right here. Your conscious mind is not going to be able to remember it, but it will imprint on your subconscious mind. And I was like testing out that technique to see if it worked. And it worked really well. You don't remember any of this. Yeah. Like, yeah. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm thankful you told me about them. But yeah, that was like, yeah, you did look surprised on a couple of them. And this is, again, it's wild.
It is, because there's like, you are able to, like, through hypnosis, you are able to go into different states of consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. So I've seen you go into somnambulism, right? I've seen you go, I don't know what the Esdale state is, but looks like, but I've seen you go into such deep hypnosis that you're completely unresponsive, but I'm able to pull you out.
Okay.
You know, so it's like you are responsive, but like your body, your mouth isn't.
I can't talk.
Yeah. Mm, you're also, you have those experiences with the hypnagogic state, which we were kind of messing around with today. And then there's also, you're capable of being in a lucid dreaming state, which was, I think, the first few sessions we put you into that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I remember seeing someone in it from a dream I'd had previously. That was interesting. That was right, I feel like, when I was coming back, right? So that state is the hypnagogic state. Is that what you're saying?
Well, okay. Like, so this is where I'm kind of confused, because I don't know if you're in REM. You don't look like you're in REM. I think that's the only thing. So the hypnagogic state was the one that we were in today, right?
Okay.
And so that was the one, and that was pretty interesting, because I told you to keep your eyes open. Your eyes were open, right?
Okay.
And your eyes weren't like doing rapid eye movement, but they were pretty close. You were looking around and you were seeing things that were happening.
Oh, no. Yeah, is that how it looked like when I read cards? Like sometimes when I do cards, and that's how
it works? Kind of. It wasn't asthmatic. You seemed a lot.
It wasn't asthmatic.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You seemed like really drowsy, almost drugged, you know, but your eyes were looking around really wildly, right? Normally when I see you channel, you're really animated, you know, like you're not drowsy. You're not like trance style, like that.
I was rolling in the back of my head. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like, let's not film this.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, so this, we've lost, like, I think indigenous tribes, shaman, kind of, you know, they've been using this forever. The self, well, not always self either, because they do have people that guide them, right? Like elders that guide, the journeys or whatever they do, depending on the culture. So this is not a new practice at all. And it extends far before, by the way, of Mesmer, like the ancient Egyptians were using this.
The Egyptians, the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And like, so they saw value to it, right? Clearly.
Yeah. I forget what it was called, but it was like sleep. So like had sleep in the name or something like that. So they were aware of and utilized
they have sleep
symbols. A sleep induced kind of ritual or whatever. Hypnotism was just, I guess, the rediscovery and the scientification of white this. Men's
world. I mean, because like the chanting, the drumming, like the rhythmic drumming and chanting, that's all part of getting the shaman into that state.
The state of trance,
right?
So with Armin van Buuren. Sorry, so every time I say it, every time I say that. Oh, a state of trance, and I just hear it in my head, like, right, with Armin van Buuren.
Hey, Armin, if you're watching this by chance, what's up? Long time no see. That's hilarious. Yeah, that's so old school, dude. That's like, what, circa 2001?
Like, maybe. I was like, he was still good in like 2009. I think he fell off with Big Room House. When he jumped on the Big Room House train. Sorry,
this is so off topic. Techno music. Because actually, what do we know about electronic music?
Yeah.
Electronic music actually is something that can produce the same brain waves in a person that they see under hypnosis or under trance. So that's why they call it trance music. I don't know.
Yeah, rave is religion and this house is my church.
Damn it.
You know?
Straight up.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, for reals. but no, seriously, that is a fact. Like classical music, And some forms of electronic music are the ones that are like repetitive and have certain like frequency to them are considered to be very highly, you know, favorable to inducing a trance.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, it's not a hot take to like point at the similarities between like, you know, let's say like your Eleusinian Mysteries and going to like a rave. Or something, right? Like, you know, yeah, a big psychoactive sex festival with repetitive music.
Best
you know?
Ever. Like, zoning out. Yeah. Like, seeing stuff, always dancing. Like, just always to dancing. That's, like, the number one. I think I left that off my list when I was talking about earlier. That's always it. Like, I could, back then, I could have, like, 10 hours straight up and, like, just be completely... like in this zone, like a super spiritual thing and not be talking to anybody and just be about it and get all kinds of information. So I highly believe that that's a thing. And I know that from brain, the studies, it is like you get into that alpha state, those theta waves are, they increase in amplitude and like that puts you in that, the zone that we talk about with athletes, with artists, with musicians that get into the zone, you know, like it's funny. It's really funny how, when we talk about occult stuff, like it's like, oh, that's ridiculous. But when we talk about athletes or, you know, musicians, right, that are like, you know, like concert pianists or violinists or whatever. And they're just like, you know, you see them and they're like, just their eyes are closed. They're not even paying attention to the instruments. They're just feeling it. That's the same thing that's happening. They're in that same state. It's just, we accept that and we're cool with it because it's like normal.
Because you get something out of it.
Yeah. Because we get something out of it as a society. Right.
Yeah.
You know, just like ritual and just off topic, but too, like rituals with sports people, you know, athletes, they do their little rituals and that's totally cool. Right. But like you see someone doing some other kind of ritual and you're like, oh, that's hocus pocus. Like it's ridiculous, you know? Yeah. But yeah, this is such a fascinating like thing. And Freud, I'm so glad because during this time frame with Mesmer and stuff like, and then shortly after Freud picked this up. Right. And he's like, I'm going to use it. But thank God, no offense to Freud, but because he did his part, okay? But where he lost me was all the, you want to sleep with your mom stuff and like that. Like that stuff, I was just like, come on, not everything's about sex. So he would have probably tainted it further had he continued. Had he had continued with it because instead he dropped that for free association instead. You know, he let go of it because he felt like there was too much criticism on it. Which is funny for him because... he's like the king of that. But, you know, and then in the 20th century, we have Erikson, right? Milton Erikson, who was the first one that he came back and like revamped it, right? Like he revamped it as a therapy, like as a way to like, well, he thought that they were also, it was also tied to hysteria. You know, so like if you have a woman that's hysterical, you know, from her period, that, you know, she, you can fix it.
Really? Like, that's crazy, dude. Because like you say, this guy revived it as hypnotherapy in the 20th century and instantly my mind jumps to this, like, you know, university, like liberal hippie guy, you know, and then you're like, yeah, he thought it was because women, like it would fix women on their periods. And then it just like reverts like straight back to like, whoa, dude, like.
No, he said, well, he also thought it was, he got results. Okay. So people were like, all right, so this is,
well, he cured periods.
I wish but like the thing is back then women were put into, the crazy house for reading, for talking, having an opinion or being on the period. Because everything was related to the period, apparently. That's what everybody thought. So you're acting like that because it's your period, whatever. Still, those, you know, still kind of lingers today. But he kind of moved things out of that. And like, oh, we're going to stop putting them in the crazy house.
Uh-huh.
And why? Why do you think? Not because it was wrong, but because
when men were
like,
wife.
Oh, shit, wait, now what? Like, who's going to cook? Like, you know, like, I mean, it's not good, but it's better than it was, right? So... he kind of got people out of that phase of just dropping their wives off at the, you know, the cuckoo's nest and actually gave them some actual therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who knows what he did when he was in there, you know, what he said or whatever. I have a feeling that there was a lot of you know, suggestions put in there that were probably nefarious.
Oh, really?
Sure.
I mean, well, so, yeah, this is something we haven't experimented yet with yet.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm very curious to see if you can put a post-hypnotic suggestion, like if I can put a post-hypnotic suggestion into you that would go against what, like, something that you would do or what you want. Because so far, all the post-hypnotic suggestions that we have done is just, as far as I know, are completely in line with what you want, you know? So, yeah.
But yeah, like the ones that I don't know how we could experiment with that, but
yeah,
what I mean is I have a feeling that these women were probably given cues to shut up and like obey, you know what I mean? Like, and that's probably not even too far off from what they would have done anyway.
Yeah.
For fear of going to,
I guess, a place, that makes sense,
you know? So, but yeah, the idea is, as far as we know, you're not supposed to be able to be hypnotized to do something you're not supposed to be able to be hypnotized to do something that goes against your like moral standing or like your ethics or whatever your personal belief system is, right? However, however, with MK Ultra, Manchurian Candidate shit.
These experiments, like, I've always been CIA programs the public. These experiments, how easy this was. I'm like, my mind's just rocked. I'm just like, the government 100% knows how to do this.
What? Yeah, they do. And like, this is, people think that, you know, conspiracy theory is like, it's literally recorded. Like, all this stuff is out there.
No, it is. They were playing around with this.
Look at Sirhan Sirhan. He just got out. Do you know he moved to Glendale?
Who?
Sirhan Sirhan, the one that killed Robert Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's out and he's in my
hometown. You said that weirder than I.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Sirhan, like, Sirhan. I can't understand what you're saying.
No,
Sirhan or something.
And we think, I mean, it's pretty well known that he was like a Manchurian Candidate, right? Like, he was programmed.
Yeah.
So just like, what's his face? The other guy that killed the other one, John F. Kennedy, Oswald, whatever. He didn't even do it, but like, you know, that's my take. Okay. So, this is something that they've been doing for a long time and it's in TV programming.
Oh yeah.
Because it's literally called that.
Yeah.
Programming TV. What's a program are you gonna watch tonight? It's literally a program, guys. Stop watching
TV. Yeah. I mean, definitely you can see the, I guess, psychic influence or the egregoric influence that comes off of TV, you know, like, you live in a world of, the more TV you watch, the more, the scarier and the angrier your world gets.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not only that, but like when they want
I have the subscription services for the streaming services.
Oh, I know.
But I don't do Netflix, and specifically for that reason, because I see that happen on Netflix.
So that is a thing. That is the one you're talking about. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But like, across the board forever. Like, just think about it. Like, anyone with a rational mind right now can think about how things have evolved over time, right? Yeah. Like, with what's acceptable, right? Uh-huh. So when it's not in the interest of the powers that be for you to not like something, it's going to be talked about in a negative way, and everyone's going to have it. Most people are going to have a negative attitude about it.
Yeah.
The minute that changes, you start to see it kind of infiltrate in TV programming. Like, you know, I mean, it's very prevalent. I think the biggest one for me was this horrible show. And I don't care who hates me for this, but it was 2 and a Half Men. Oh, my God. That show. I was dating someone who watched that. And I would be sitting there at my desk typing my thesis. And I'd be hearing it. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? This is, my Nana would have had an absolute heart attack with the stuff that they were saying on TV at prime time during dinner hours. Right. And it was like, what is going on? Like, this is so dirty and filthy. Like, this is now, and now that all that stuff that like before was taboo is now considered norm. It's a slow programming of people's minds, like, to make them accept things.
So, yeah, but I mean, like, if you think about TV in the 2000s and like all comedy was racist comedy, it went backwards.
It did.
It was like,
right. I mean, it did. Everybody got way too,
and then everybody's like, no. Like, it's so funny because you think back on the 2000s, like, whoa, dude, TV was fucked up then. You know, like, as in, like,
okay, how, like, go back farther.
Over the top it was.
Go back to Looney Tunes.
I don't think.
Wow.
Like, I don't think
you
it's
watch
that
it now
bad.
And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
That stuff was hardcore. But like, this is a thing that they use, and they've been using it forever, like to program, to hypnotize audiences. Like, just think about the average person that gets off work. They do their 9 to 5 and they come home and they crack open a beer and they sit down in their lazy chair and they watch TV and they're like hypnotized all day.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, that's kind of what it is, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's subconscious programming. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, that's what it's basically all boils down to, which is where I think in the experiments that we've been conducting, we've been trying to figure out if you're, because in your personal publications or whatever, where you approach the manifestation of mediumship and mm-hmm. psychic phenomenon as a part of some kind of fracturing of the psyche that right. happens in a traumatic state. Yeah. One of the things we're trying to explore with hypnosis is if we, like, you know, if we can find that, like, in the subconscious mind, if we can trigger that, if we can open that channel, or, you know, it, like, is it all a psychological thing, or is it is there an external thing at play, you know,
with regards to fracturing of the psyche, or
no, like, the mediumship, right?
Oh yeah. Okay, so that's interesting, because the dissociation theory, right, of uh-huh. hypnosis, which is from Pierre Janet, that is the idea that, you know, within, like, hypnosis itself causes a fracturing of the subconscious and the conscious mind, because they are supposedly yeah. together, integrated, but they're not. I mean, we know this.
Not when you're a dream.
Yeah, like,
you're maybe. Yeah.
Perhaps, like, right. But when you experience, like, severe trauma and stuff, like, that's something a little different, where it's like a part of you gets kind of lost somewhere yeah. or missing, or, I don't know, just splintered off. It's like the Horcrux from Harry Potter, you know, yeah. like that idea that you, like, leave little fragments of yourself around. And that's why, like, ancient shamanistic practices of, like, soul retrieval, right? Uh-huh. That's what it is. It's like to go find those broken bits and bring it back so you can integrate and be a whole person again, right? But, like, then there's, I mean, with the mediumship stuff, it's like, if you can, okay, so if you can access the subconscious, right? And uh-huh. that is an actual thing that is separate from, and I mean, I guess we accept this, right? Like, that subconscious is separate from conscious, right?
Maybe
it, that's, I mean, that's the, if we're talking about an overall generalized belief system here, uh-huh. from medical to psychological to just general perception, people are pretty much accepting, right, that it's subconscious is something that we're not consciously in control of, that's the underlying driving
factor.
We're
not consciously in control of, but I think that a large part of doing any kind of, like, vision work or psychological work or whatever is not necessarily making it work with the conscious mind, okay. making the conscious mind aware of it, and then them working together. Because the thing is, like, when it is controlling you, that is when you are, that's when you suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like that question had not ever been posed to me before in that way.
What
you just said about if it's truly, like, a psychological thing, or if it's something else, right? Like, if it's, so it can very well be both and the same, like, because uh-huh. if it is a separate thing, but together, oh my God.
Yeah. Because you've pulled some information in these sessions.
Right. So
think twice.
So yeah. Like,
some you shouldn't have known.
That happened today, right?
That happened today, and I think it happened in our second session too.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What that one was.
But there were other checks that I did as well that the mediumship didn't come out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, when I'm thinking about this, I'm like, okay, so our consciousness is what we're aware of, right? Uh-huh. In our mind, like, our thoughts and stuff, right? So the subconscious, then, yeah, I think it would be something separate from us. Actually, that's the collective. That would be maybe the sum total of everything that we have access to, kind of. Like, it,
yeah.
Maybe it's the anchor. Like, oh my God, like, I don't know. I'm seeing in my mind, I'm trying to figure out how to describe this.
Yeah.
Like, if there's, like, a big tree, right?
Uh-huh.
The the trunk of the tree is like the subconscious. Uh-huh. And then each one of the branches and leaves is like the conscious. Like, uh-huh. Do you know what I mean? Like what little, I don't know. So like, or like the leaves would be the our consciousness.
Yeah.
And then like the subconscious would be like the trunk and the branches, like being able to lead back into the absolute, to the source, whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is. It's like our ability to access. Yeah. Our ability to access the subconscious is how connected, how spiritually connected we are to the fact that we know that we're not just here in this form.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I feel like that is what it is, but nobody's going to say that because that would be unscientific.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like that's going to be witchcraft. You know, no, I mean, medically speaking, so subconscious instead has to be this internal thing.
I recognize no authority other than the authority of God.
That's right. So. Well, I think that that is God.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
What, science?
No, like the subconscious. The subconscious is our connection to God.
Okay.
That's why so many people don't have access to it.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, like, you know, it's there. It's in them.
I don't think.
They don't have access.
Yeah, I don't think the... I don't think the spiritual relationship happens in the head. I think it happens.
It's not in the head, though.
Yeah.
Where is
the subconscious?
Where no. Where is your head? Where do your thoughts come from?
I don't know. I feel like they come from.
That's because we're told that.
No, I feel.
I know.
Because when I'm doing like magic or spiritual work, or I'm like trying to connect to the divinity, that like comes from here. You know. That's where.
Okay. When I get information.
Yeah.
It's not coming from here.
Yeah.
It's coming from out here somewhere.
Yeah.
So that to me means it's like it's I'm getting it. So it has to be part of me, but it's coming not from me. And from me is in my headspace. Right?
Yeah.
Like those are my thoughts. My sodium ion channels, my thoughts are made of salt. All y'all's thoughts are made of salt, which is really weird to think about, but that's true. And like, which is electric, right? Electricity, electrical currents. But like our subconscious is outside of us, but also attached to us somehow. And like it's the ability to access that.
Yeah.
That allows us to, I don't know, get information. So that's, I think that's why some people are more connected than other people, because some people just don't have any desire to be connected to it.
Yeah.
You know, like why not? Why can't it be both? Like both part of us and not. You know, like, because it's everybody, like, I think the collective, I think Jung had it right. Like the collective unconscious is like the sum total of everybody's experiences to date, right? Of everybody that's ever lived on earth or whatever, or wherever. And if you can access that, we can get that information and that's how it comes through. But that's probably also why it's so fast when you get it.
Yeah.
Because it comes like so jumbled and fast because it's just coming through these channels. Like, I don't know. I can totally see it in my head right now. I wish I could explain it better. But I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily separate or part. Like, maybe it's not. Like, I don't think it's inside of us driving us to act bad. Like, it causes people to act bad.
Well, it's not that it's driving us to act bad, but when it's in conflict, right?
Right.
Well, and so a lot of the times, like, the lucid dreaming practice or whatever, when you're learning it and you're mastering it, it feels like you are fighting with your subconscious mind. It's like a war.
Like, what do you mean?
It's like you're wrestling with it. It's like it's trying to maintain control of the dream and you're trying to wrestle your control from it, right? And it's sometimes it wins and it takes back control and then you're like, you lose your lucidity and you're back on the ride again, right? But or it will destabilize or something like that. And so what I really think is happening in that process, like when you're learning how to lucid dream, is you're learning how to have a conversation with your subconscious mind.
Okay.
And I think that definitely that personal experience that I have within all the different types of dream work that I do, it immediately kicked in when I was... in those first few sessions we had, I started walking you through certain subconscious symbols to try to trigger certain experiences in you, right?
Okay.
And the first one would have been that entrance into Abzu, but we walked you into the Akashic Records too, using very popular technique.
Right.
Where you pulled...
That was weird.
Pulled some information. I've been
there before.
Yeah.
And once, and I got there myself that time. Yeah. But so that was not hard to be in there, but it was almost, it was impossible to get information about other people. I couldn't.
You got some information. I never told you what it was, but you got some information about me. You just didn't get the information I was looking for.
Yeah, well, that's weird. So I, okay, I'm thinking back to like, okay, so the subconscious, when you're at war with it, when are we at, okay, so let's think, let's like break this down. When your subconscious is ruling you and it's causing you to have a bad time.
If you're in conflict,
what is it? Like, what is happening? It's that you're doing something, typically speaking, that goes against your best interest, right? Like mostly, like it's going to be,
your best interest, or you're lying to yourself. Mm-hmm. Like there's divorce between your, and this is what I'm always getting back into this, you know. It's man, I sound like such a hippie, but it's that like integrated existence, right? So being able to just like accept things, it's like when you're trying to control things around you, you're trying to control too much,
right?
And that's when stuff starts going to shit,
right?
Because nothing's going to work the way that you want, and you're living completely within your conscious mind, your conscious awareness.
Yeah.
And so when you're, this is how you end up in conflict. You know, like an example of this would be if, you know, everything in your life is going right. You have a house, you have a family, you have a job, you know, really no complaints, but the person you wanted to be president of the United States didn't get elected. And so now, like, you spend the next 4 years in a perpetual state of rage, protesting and that kind of, and if everybody would just, you know, if the world would just fall in line, then everything would be okay.
Right.
And you're actively like, this is your conscious mind living in opposition with your subconscious mind and in conflict with it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's driving you to anger.
Yeah.
Because you're not able to just...
You're not seeing the forest for the trees. You're seeing each tree individually and is in your way. Like, instead of the whole picture of, like, there's certain things that are... You're not supposed... Like, why are you focused on certain things so much when you have all of these other things going on?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it is that. It's like we're... When we get... Like you said, the control thing, that is a fact. Like the anxiety people have, like the panic attacks, and I am not dismissing that at all, because it ruled my life for 20 years. Like I was a mess.
I thought my anxiety would never go away. I thought I was doomed for the rest
of
my life.
Are you kidding me? Legitimately could never envision a day when I didn't have debilitating fetal position, can't leave the house. Panic attacks, anxiety, just overwhelming impending doom constantly. And like that was it was torture and it was horrible. And like what changed? It definitely wasn't drugs, because like those made it actually worse over time. Right. Like, but, it worked for a little bit to numb it, I guess, but you know, and I'm talking pharmaceuticals, like what they gave me, but this stuff over time, it was a perception change, which is almost impossible to do when you're in that state, though. Like, it's really hard.
So Jung called it a psychic change, but he said a psychic change as in like psychological, not as in like,
I think he probably meant both.
He was psychokinesis. Like, yeah, I know. He's a little spooky.
He was very spooky. Yeah. His mom was a tarot card reader. But, you know, medium.
That was my experience too. You know, I did the whole Western psychiatric drug thing, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then it was the complete restructuring of my priorities and my perspective that all of a sudden, and I remember too, because when I was doing like my mental health thing, like I was doing therapy or whatever, and they were telling me that like, you know, my anxiety would go away. It was like, no, it's not gonna go away.
Yeah, like,
and then now I don't live with debilitating anxiety.
Yeah. No,
it started when I was 18. I like couldn't drive more than like half an hour because I would have a panic attack.
Oh, Yeah. They're the worst.
I like pull, like, especially being in LA, I like pull over on the side of the freeway.
Oh no.
And have a panic attack in the middle of traffic.
Oh no. Yeah. You're that guy.
Because it was like, I'm in the car for too long, you know? Yeah.
No, mine started at 18 also. Like it was, I remember one day I thought I was having a heart attack. Yeah. Like I just was like, I lost my breath. Like I just felt like somebody punched me in the gut. Like I didn't know what was wrong with me. Uh-huh. And if I look back at that time in my life, it was like, what was I doing? I was trying to control every single thing in my life, like all of it. Like I was like,
well, my big thing was expectations. I had like perfectionist, mm-hmm. and it set expectation way too high expectations for myself and way too high of expectations for everybody else. Yeah. Exactly. And like that was the divorce, right? That was the war with my subconscious mind, because a lot of time when you would, or I would be entering those, that state where I was interfacing with my subconscious mind, you know, like my insecurities about not being able to live up to my own expectations, ones that I set for myself, that were like driving me into these like very severe coping mechanisms.
Right.
They're driving me into analysis paralysis and depression.
That's a great term.
Yeah.
And I think putting those ideas on other people too, like, you know, projecting outwards, right? Of like, this is what I'm capable of, so therefore you should also be capable of it. That just completely takes away from everyone's personal path and their own, like, what they're supposed to get out of life, right?
Yeah.
And it's putting our, like, ego at the forefront of being like, this should be this way because I said so. Just like, this should be the president right now because I said so. Like,
yeah.
We don't like just your, our views are not like, you know, they're not the end all be all, right? Like we have, and that's part of it. I think it's learning to like accept the things that you can't change and like, you know, like, you know, change things you can, you know, the whole serenity prayer thing that that prayer, like that's the one part of AA that I was like, that shit is legit. Like that prayer is great because it says those things that are very valid. Yeah. And like, when you let go of that constant need to be in micromanaging control of everything, then you're not in opposition of your subconscious and you don't have these problems anymore. And that's something that's literally almost impossible for people to attain because you can't do it when you're in that state.
Yeah. Like,
it does require, I think, perhaps maybe some big event to happen, a
big event. And then it's also an intuitive process. Having that conversation with your subconscious is learning how to trust it.
That, oh my God, please. Like I give up. Like, I give up fighting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And to like just being able to trust that, like, you know, I'm doing the right thing and I'm making the right decision and I'm letting go. Like I'm not overthinking anything. I'm not letting my conscious frontal cortex that wants to tear everything apart make me second guess myself or what I'm doing or any of that, right? Mm-hmm. Just letting your intuition drive you when it needs to drive you, and then using your conscious, rational form of understanding to, you know, cut away from that drive, basically, and give it shape.
Yeah. I got to tell you something right now.
Huh?
I don't know if I should say it on camera. But I'm seeing something right now on you. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. So I think maybe this, like the hypnosis thing for somebody that has the ability to get into that unconscious mind or the collective, whatever it is, whatever that comes from. Cause I'm not going to be like one of these other people out there that are psychic that, can I say psychic? Cause I don't believe anybody. I have a hard time with it. Right. Yeah. Like, even though I experience it, I think 9 out of 10 people are lying about it. And because I just think they are, but,
I've known a lot of mediums and psychics, but none that I would like, I don't know.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, maybe exactly.
Like a couple things. I don't know.
It's very few. But it's funny though. I think most of the actual ones I do know are in the occult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because where else are you going to go? Like, maybe church.
I'm just saying, I mean, you see a lot of those other ones that are down at the, you know, the Crystal Festival.
Yeah.
Guy on Ancient Aliens.
Oh my god.
Over in Joshua Tree at the rave.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't believe that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, like if you have the ability to get into it, I think that I'm not gonna pretend I know where it comes from. I don't. Like, and that I've had people give me mad shit for that. Like, oh, you don't know where you get your information from? No, I don't. Like,
yeah.
I don't have guides like people say they have, you know, like that whole idea. Like, oh, I've got these guides that are always around me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And maybe that's true. But for me, it's not. At least I don't know about it if it is. So I don't know where it comes from. And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, because the stuff I get is not like detrimental to anybody. It's like, you know, it's like helpful stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what I'm told anyway. But, and the only metric you have of how psychic you are is the people you read for telling you. So it's, yeah. You know, that's another thing, but it's one of those things where I don't know where it comes from, but if that's where it's coming from, I think that with hypnosis, that it might serve to open that channel a little wider.
So, yeah, I think one of the, I mean, that what we were experimenting with today was being able to open that channel on command.
Yeah, because I just saw you turn into two other complete people right now.
Yeah.
I am not even kidding. I was like, what is happening? Like, I was just watching you and you're talking and you became two other people completely, like, and very distinct. Face and ethnicity completely separate from what you are right now. And I'm just like sitting here going, what's happening? Like, wow. Like, yeah. And then, I'll tell you after, but like, wow, that's nuts. So I don't know. Like we've sat across from each other doing this for a while now. And I have not seen that before.
Oh yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not that drastic.
Uh-huh.
Like it was like, I'm talking to somebody else.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Twice.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe I'm still like in it.
Maybe you are.
You know, I mean, and then because now we use it for, okay, so it went from this thing where it's like, oh, it's pseudoscience, right? Because it's been written off as pseudoscience. But yet it's not, because it's used and covered by insurance.
Yeah.
Even, not that that means shit, but it is for smoking cessation, right? Like,
I would call it pseudoscience as like, it is not scientific.
Well, why do we call something pseudoscience?
Well, that is a derogatory term that is used to delegitimize things by people that believe the only worldview has to come from reductive scientificist,
which, by the way, is, again, if people forget, it is a construct, an idea of what we believe to be true at the time, and it is not supposed to be taken as utter
fact. That's the difference between science and scientificism. Scientificism is an ideology that states that, you know, everything can be reduced down to material processes that we can measure with science, the tool, right? Science is a tool. That is what it is.
It's a tool to try to understand our world the best we can with what we have at the
time.
But
it's like, yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, I'm not like, you don't use that tool for everything.
No, you know? And you can't. Yeah. And also we are constantly having to backtrack.
So
and
I mean,
correct.
I think we've touched on it before. We're constantly flirting with psychology. I mean, it makes sense. You're a psychologist, but
But I'm a psychologist for a different reason.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a psychologist that sees patients, right? Like I did in training, but that's not why. Like I didn't go into it for that. I went into it to understand myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, that's what I think most psychologists do.
But
like, it's to understand what the hell.
Yeah. We shouldn't be. We shouldn't be taking like explorations of self and consciousness and, you know, our internal worlds. We shouldn't be holding that up to science and being like, why doesn't this fit within this tool? It must not be real. It, you know,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Because we can't like, science can't account for. Okay, it's like, all right, so back to psychology for a second. Like, okay, when we're talking about behaviorism, that nightmare phase of psychology we had for a while, where it was like, the only thing that we're going to deal with is the visible, measurable behaviors of somebody. None of the stuff that happens in the mind matters because we can't see it or measure it. That's insane. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that was the whole Skinner, you know, his whole thing with, he was like, if I can't see it, taste it, touch it, smell it, measure it, it doesn't exist. So all of the things that you think about that cause you to act out a certain way are not the problem. It's the behavior itself. Like, that doesn't fix anything.
Yeah.
That's how we get into lobotomizing people and stuff like that, right? Because we're taking out part of the brain that's responsible for making you have fits. You know what I mean? Instead of the actual problem, which whatever that is, you know what I mean? Like, so that the idea that only observable behavior matters is like the same thing. It's like, no, it's not that simple. Like, it, that's nice. Good luck with that. Like, you're never going to find an answer to anything if you stay on that vein, right?
Yeah.
Ever. Like, so there is, and then also just let's for a second, just think about this. We're on a rock flying through outer space at how fast? Allegedly.
Yeah.
You know, that's normal, but like the fact that maybe there's things out there that we don't understand isn't, like, that's crazy. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Those things are not congruent with one another. So like, these people are whole, this is why there's so much, this is why there's so much freaking problems, because people are living in this opposition with the reality that is full of mystery and wonder and like magic, and trying to make it fit into the square box of freaking science.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I think maybe if you get hypnotized, maybe it'll change your mind.
It'll change your mind.
If you have someone telling you while you're under hypnosis that you're being dumb. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I would have a hard, see, I can't be a hypnotherapist.
You can't.
I would. Oh God. Can you imagine? Be like, you're being stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
I do.
Knock it off.
Too blunt. I can't do it. Nope. Couldn't do it.
I know. I think that was one of the things that I was struggling with during our first few sessions was, I think my bluntness and my impatience was, leaving my technique kind of sloppy, and it was causing you confusion when you'd either come out of the state or sometimes go into it. 'Cause we had one session, you had a false awakening.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, okay.
What happened?
So I was pulling you out, and the way that I pull you out is I count backwards from five and to one, and every step I slowly turn on different body parts, and I remind you that you're okay. Well, during that transition, you started talking to somebody that wasn't there, and I got to two, and I said, you are coming back now, and then you said, she's not coming back.
No, my God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wait.
And, but okay, I kept walking you out, and I thought you were, I thought you were back, but your eyes, because sometimes when you come back, it takes a while for your eyes to fully open, but they're like open. Mm-hmm. It's like you're waking up from sleep, right?
Okay.
So sometimes it takes a little while. But I thought you were back. And it was just taking you a while for your eyes to close, and you were like mumbling, and I thought you were talking to me. And so I was like confirming, I was like, are you back with us? Like that kind of stuff. And you just kept talking to whatever was there. And I was like, oh, like you're not. And then I noticed you had the like little falling sensation or whatever, and your body caught itself. So I realized you were in hypnagogia at that time. I was like, crap. Like, it was like,
so I kind of
panicked because I was like, well, she started talking to this thing, and then it said that she's not coming back, and now she's not back, she's stuck in hypnagogia. So I had to like pull you back out again or whatever.
That's when I was okay. So I do remember that what was going on there. I was talking to people I had a dream about years ago.
Yeah,
same person from a dream many, like at least 2 years ago or something. Yeah. And that was weird because I was like, why is that person? I don't know this person. And I, and also another thing, as I was reading through this stuff, I found something very disturbing, actually. Okay. Allegedly. I don't know if this is true.
Yeah.
And anyone watching that happens to maybe know this can maybe leave something in the comments, but says that your brain is not capable of making up faces in dreams. Like the faces you see are people that you know, or a conglomeration of people that you know, or like it can't make up new characters or something like that. And these people were definitely not like,
well, so, yeah, so I don't that, know. That was like one of the things that I'm probing, and I have a personal belief in that hypnagogia is the state that is the precursor to astral projection, right? So it's when I've successfully astral projected, it was through a hypnagogic state that was triggered by meditation, right?
Okay, yeah.
And the reason is because when I felt that space before, like at least that state of trance that I was in, when I felt that before, it was when I was doing wake-induced lucid dreaming, right? Okay. So when I was, like, astral projection, doing the OB or whatever, that headspace that it felt very similar to wake-induced lucid dreaming.
Okay.
Right before you're going in. So we're also probing is the hypnagogia, you know, like the subconscious where we can get that mediumship. So I have a working theory, working hypothesis in these occult experiments that we're conducting. But the hypnagogic state is where the spirits are able to kind of come through direct manifestation.
Sure. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that probably, I think that aligns with a lot of the research too, because there's a lot of research that shows that the most frequently, the time that most people frequently, the most likely time that someone's going to hear some psychic message or like hear their name called or something like that is in that state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the state that people also experience sleep paralysis, right?
Oh, is it?
It's the same state.
That sucks.
And so, yeah. And like, if you listen to people when they talk about sleep paralysis, you know, like these entities to them are more than dream characters. They're very frightening. So I think this is like what we're necessarily trying to probe. And so today what we did was we put you into hypnagogia with your eyes open, mm-hmm. your body asleep.
Oh, yeah.
And we let you just hang out there for like 10 minutes. Yeah,
and you know what the thing is that people see the same things, right? Uh-huh. Like people in that state, like people with sleep paralysis, they all report the same things, right? So that science will be like, oh, it's just a hallucination, you know, it's just a hallucination. What if it's not that? Maybe it's just that's what's there, you know, like maybe that's what's there in that space. Because everyone says the same thing, like little shadow figures, shadow people, whatever, the hat man, whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. And I've definitely seen that, you know, like I've seen those things too. I don't think I have sleep paralysis. I hope not. I don't recall ever having that, but I have seen things, you know, and I think today I saw similar, like very stereotypical things that everybody else reports too, right? Yeah. But that's not what I thought. I wasn't like, oh, those are those things everybody sees. It was just like, oh, that's what's there. Like, you know, and it makes me wonder if it's like similar to the DMT studies that they're doing right now, New Mexico, you know, University of New Mexico, where they have people in those DMT like IVs, where they're seeing all the same hallucinations, right? They're across all cultures, religion, backgrounds, they're all seeing the same shit. And it's like, why? Oh, because the optic nerve can see more of the visible light spectrum, or the light spectrum. Like that would be crazy if that's true, because that would mean that all of this stuff's real, that we're just not programmed to see it.
Yeah.
Just like color blindness, right? If you're colorblind and you can't see green or red, okay? Right? You go your whole life without seeing green or red. But other people around you can see it. Doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It just means that you can't see it, right?
Yeah.
Still there.
Or maybe it does mean that it doesn't exist.
For them.
I mean, if you want to jump into philosophy, we can go there.
For them, sure, it doesn't, right? Because they can't see it, right? Yeah. Like, sure. But maybe occasionally you can, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm not colorblind as far as I know. So I don't know, but like maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's everything is just here and we just can't see it unless we're in a certain layer.
A layer.
A layer. Mm-hmm. Not a layer, but like a layer, you know, of reality. I can't wait to see what those studies show. Actually, it'll be fascinating to find out if that's what it is. That'd be dope. That'd be actually terrifying. But yeah. I mean, whatever is there seems to be very low level. Uh-huh. Like that's how it came across. Uh-huh. Is this low level stuff? Like just annoying, impish stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to hang out with you.
Uh-huh.
Kind of stuff. Like these are not my people. I got to go somewhere else. Yeah. That's what I remember from today is feeling like I was in the wrong crowd. Like I was hanging out with the wrong crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think that it's, I'm excited to do more of this.
Yeah. Well, because our next move is to incorporate it into a magical setting.
Right.
To do evocation paired with the altered state, the hypnotically induced altered state of consciousness. I'm also curious at implementing some like chaos sigil magic with it too, where we can plant the sigil and push it into your subconscious mm-hmm. mind with the hypnotic amnesia or whatever.
Uh-huh. Because I mean, I'm good at that.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing that forever. I didn't know that was chaos magic.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. I just know if I do something like that, I just forget about it immediately.
Yeah.
On purpose. And I'm able to. So uh-huh. I think that's, yeah, like I just forget about it. And then it comes out and I'm like, oh, that's right. Like I did that before. Yeah. I was there. I mean, so over the time that things have like, so we went through this period of like it being exciting and like people are getting surgeries without anesthetic by it. And then we have like big pharma, fuck you guys. And like medicine coming in and saying no. And then people's calling it pseudoscience. And now we're back to this place where it is mainstream now, right?
Yeah.
For it is like people use it all the time for things. It's very popular in pop culture too, uh-huh. with regards to like, again, soul retrieval stuff or whatever new age stuff is going on. But like, has it changed or has it, is it the same exact things just with new terminology attached to it?
It's the same with the occult, right? Like mm-hmm. we just rediscover things every half century, you know, just rediscover things. So, I mean, we know that this kind of altered state of consciousness is something that's been explored in spiritual, religious, and healing ceremonies since the ancient Egyptians, right?
Right.
And so it's like we just keep rediscovering it, reinterpreting it, right?
Yeah.
And so I think like, you know, one of the fun things about what me and you are doing together is I'm trying to think like a Victorian hypnotist.
I know.
You know?
I know. I love that. I have some questions for you since you're the one doing it. Okay.
Okay.
I'm like, I don't know anything about it. Like I'm just the guinea pig. Right. So, with regards to like it being, you know, do you think that it's, I don't know, is it possible? Do you think that it could be misused?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Good to know. I'm like keeping, some of the things we've discovered this past week, I'm like, that is going into the grave wizard secrets. Like,
right.
I will never reveal that. Yeah, that's exactly. It is too much power. Too much power. Right. Holy shit.
Okay, so that being said.
Yeah.
So do you think it's more about having power or control over someone's mind? Or is it more about giving that person the freedom of liberating them from their self-limiting beliefs?
Okay. So, well, I mean, this just has to do with conversation with the subconscious mind. I think it is. And from what I've, my curiosity, the reason that I'm doing it with you mm-hmm. is watching in lifetime how the subconscious mind works, right. How I can poke around and mess around with it. Right.
Right.
And I think for you, it's having that conscious conversation with the subconscious mind. And both of those are very liberating things, right? Mm-hmm. But the person that's sitting there and holding a metaphorical scalpel to your subconscious mind obviously can, you know, do some messy things to it.
Right. So, I mean, like, you could be possibly like be like, you're attracted to me or something, you know, yeah. like when you wake up, you're going to be like,
well, it
you're
reminds leave your husband me, and like, it reminds go, me know? Of a certain hypnotherapist that all of a sudden he makes a lot of sense to me.
Oh, yeah.
Certain hypnotherapists. We mm-hmm. might know. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll leave that one alone. So is this, do you think that after doing this for a week now, pretty much every day, right? Almost. Do you think this process reveals something fundamental about the nature of consciousness, such as how malleable it is?
Yes.
Or how it's possibly multi-layered?
So, I mean, yes, I mean, I feel very comfortable with, you know, where we've been, the different states of consciousness you've been in. They're ones that I'm extremely familiar with, you know, I've been familiar with since I was a teenager. I don't feel like I'm in any new territory. It's just the technique's different, you know?
Right. I mean, how do you think this can benefit for the cult practices?
I think it's really powerful. I mean, the part of our occult practice that has to deal with mentalism, one of the things we've also been experimenting with is I've been putting symbols and visions inside of you and walking you through them.
Okay.
So you're aware of those ones. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's been a lot. Yeah.
No, you're aware of those ones. I didn't do amnesia with those ones. I think one of the powerful things there is that you can do, you know, one of the things I want to experiment with you is Bardonian magic, which is basically a lot of visualization. If you're constructing mandalas, you know, if you have a trained magician or esotericist as your hypnotist that can plant mandalas in your head in the hypnotic state, that can construct tarot cards in your head within the hypnotic state, can construct a Golden Dawn temple or a Kabbalistic path, or a ceremony while you're in the hypnotic state, this can be pretty powerful magic, you know? So yeah. This is definitely something that, you know, I think we need to step forward into as magicians, you know? I mean, it's so incredibly easy. It's like you can construct all those things. You can create that temple in the hypnotic state, right? Right. Because we've put you into Apsu. You went to the Akashic exact way that I described it, you know,
yeah, using exactly, the, I've been using there the
symbols.
The same way too.
Yeah. Using the exact symbols. It's like, that's some pretty powerful stuff that you can interface with those symbols in lifetime. So having a trained esotericist or magician as your hypnotist, you know, you can definitely do some pretty wild shit with that.
Yeah. I wouldn't want it any other way. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I don't, yeah. I'm good with the new age guys.
Yeah, but there's also like
powerful wizard
using hypnosis within the ceremony itself, not right. just planting the vision. But then right. like, you know, you could also take that into like, okay, I'm going into a state of hypnosis within, or I'm using hypnosis within my ceremony or my ritual to right. become the scrying medium or whatever, right. instead of looking at the crystal ball. Right.
Oh,
or yeah, looking at the crystal ball while in the
state. I was literally doing that a minute ago, watching your face change into another person twice. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I do this all the time on my own. I realize just not guided. And like, I think that's, I like this added aspect of it because I think it's going to possibly be more fruitful, actually. Uh-huh. To have somebody like guiding me through it, because there's this level of sometimes I get a little scared, not scared, but like a little startled, right? Like by things, you know me.
Yeah,
I get startled by things, and so then that we want to like kind of be able to have that somebody else to kind of hold my hand, so to speak, metaphorically speaking, during it. So I mean, I've been having a grand old time with this actually. So I look forward to more of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than the headaches and the confusion, no, none today.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
Maybe it's because I said something about it.
Or Yeah, we're refining the technique. We're getting better at it. Yeah.
I mean, it's literally trial and error right now.
Yeah, it is trial and error.
Anna's brain and like...
I know. Let's mess around with...
I was like, tinker around.
Anna's head. Yeah.
See what happens.
God. Well, this is what I love about being an occultist. It's like, I'm not beholden to any licensing body. That's right. You know? It's like, I do this in the name of... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The name of magic.
Yeah. And I'm totally wisdom. A participant here, like, about it too, because this is fascinating to me. I didn't think it could happen.
Yeah.
I didn't think I could be hypnotized, and I feel a little stupid now about it, because I was like, I don't know what can hypnotize me. I was wrong.
I know. I think now we need to find somebody else for me to hypnotize.
We just have
to
somebody make sure, lined up for you. Yeah, yes, yeah. We do.
Just to make sure that, you know.
Yeah. So, hey, if you're out there, you guys want to get hypnotized, like,
yeah, if you want to get hypnotized, you know, we need to verify.
Yeah, we have to have validity scales here.
Yeah, if this is just a relationship.
Yeah.
This is because of our dynamic.
Yeah.
Or if, you know, I'm just an overpowered illusion mage, you know, which it would make sense, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Yeah.
It's probably both.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Well. I think we're going to call it a night.
Yeah.
I guess next week, let's jump on internet occultism.
Okay. 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 Yeah. That's no, I got a lot to say about that. Yeah. Lots there. There's so much.
Yeah. And I was in a lot of those groups.
I know.
Yeah. And so I'm really excited. I'm going to spill all the tea.
Yeah. No,
you can. But I will definitely call out.
Yes.
Yes.
So yeah, you'll have my role of talking shit.
Yeah.
Cool.
No. Yeah, there's a few of them that don't like me.
Oh no, really? Yeah. I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I can't imagine why, huh? You know?
Yeah, no, I can't. And I love it.
Okay. All right.
All right, guys.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stone.
Thank you. All right. As always.
Have a good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing the insights of both practitioner and scholar to guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience, and each step brings new discoveries. Until next time, continue your exploration. And stay attuned to the unseen.